The Transfiguration is one of those images that maybe we can have some sort of an impression of in our imagination, but at the same time, to hear all of this language of the glory of God, if we listen to the opening prayer, there's this talk of adopted sonship and sharing in God's glory. That can be hard for us to kind of bring down to our level in this life right now. So I want to offer an image that, at least for me, has remained impressed upon my imagination very intensely. You may remember in February of 2015, there was a video that ISIS released. It was on the beaches of Libya, sunrise. There were 21 men in orange jumpsuits and black hoods. And one by one, they were asked if they believed in Jesus. One by one, without fear, each of those men said yes. And their lives were poured out on that beach. It was originally 20 men. 21 were kidnapped, but ISIS realized one of these men doesn't belong with these others. ISIS was looking for Coptic Christians, so members of the Eastern Church. There was one man who wasn't, and so they were willing to let him go, but so moved was he by the faith of these other 20 men that he said, "Their God is my God." And so the number of martyrs was 21. There is what the glory of God looks like in this life. And I hold that up as an example for us on the Feast of the Transfiguration, because I believe in many ways we as Americans in the Catholic Church have lost sight of the glory that God calls us to. Those 21 men are not alone. It's almost become trite to say that, you know, the 20th century had more Christian martyrs than all of the other 19 combined. It's a real fact. And it probably will be the case that the 21st will exceed that. Today, our brothers and sisters in Iraq, in India, are going to Mass just like they did the week before and the week before that, with the risk of being killed. Some of them journey miles by foot because they want to create that space for the glory of God to break in. Do we have that dedication to create space for God's glory? I think that we forget how privileged in the American church we are. And so that's part of the reason that maybe we come to Mass and we find it boring, where we come to our time of prayer each day and go, but there's this thing that I've got to do first, or, you know, God will understand if I just let it go this time. We need to understand and see reality correctly. And it is those 21 martyrs on the beach of Libya. It's our brothers and sisters in Iraq, in India, and around the world in countless other places who risk their life for the glory of God each and every week, who see reality rightly. Generally not us, in our very comfortable, very safe practice of faith, where we could choose any number of 11 parishes to go to this morning here in Cedar Rapids, where we hear people say, "Well, they closed my parish, so I guess I'm going to a different church, leaving the Catholics behind," or, "I didn't like what that priest said or did, so I'm out." If that isn't the language of privilege that has softened our hearts and blinded us to the glory of God, I don't know what is. We need desperately space to allow the glory of God to break into our hearts. But maybe we would say, "Hey, Father, you know what? I'm Orthodox. I'm here. I'm here for the long haul." And we use that word, Orthodox, a lot as a kind of litmus test. And we use it to mean, do I believe everything that the church teaches? And it's sad that that's the standard, right? That we've reached a place, especially in the Western church, where that's not a given. And we choose to accept that, "Oh, I can let go of certain key teachings in the moral life. Jesus will understand. He's nice. But orthodoxy actually means something other than right thinking and obedience to the teachings of the faith. It actually means right praise or right worship. And so we might go, hey, Father, you know what? It's part of the reason that I come here. I love reverent liturgy. But that's not enough. Take that from a priest who tries to celebrate the liturgy reverently. There's a great temptation to make sure that I'm doing it right, fulfilling all of the rubrics, doing my absolute best to sing the few parts that I need to sing correctly. And that's questionable at times. And yet it's entirely possible to get to the end of Mass and go, Lord, when did I talk to you? When did I give you my heart? And we can do the same thing. We can come to Mass, able to argue for the faith well, and then we can spend the whole time we are to be worshiping God, reverently, totally disconnected from Him. Maybe that means we're focused on our neighbor. Maybe that means that we're allowing our worries to occupy us rather than become a conversation point with the Lord. Maybe we are just so desperate for Father's homily to be over that that's all we can think about is the clock. There's any number of things that might become an obstacle to actually sharing our heart with the Lord, regardless of how reverent we look, how truly we believe what's in the catechism, how much we want to follow Jesus. We sort of sell Peter short in this gospel. You go, oh, there's foolish Peter again. He just wants to cling to this moment. His impulse is actually right. When God reveals Himself in the Old Testament, tabernacles are constructed, places of encounter. And so Peter is acting as a man of great faith, saying, okay, yeah, this is an incredible thing. We need a place to encounter the Lord. I'm going to be faithful to what I know to be in the past. But God has something more in store. And so in that intensity of God's revelation, saying, this is my beloved Son, they fall prostrate in this terror at the greatness of God. And then I love the way that slightly different translation puts it. It says, when they look up, they saw only Jesus. It's a masterfully understated presentation of what goes on. And therein lies Jesus' goal in all of this. We may be tempted to hear it and say, they look up and they see only Jesus. Oh, too bad. Moses and Elijah are gone. Ah, Jesus isn't radiant anymore. They look up and they see Jesus. And the fathers of the church understand that this is preparation because at this point they are going down the mountain, yes, but also down to the conclusion of the greatest moment of darkness in their lives, Jesus being crucified. And Jesus' desire is that in that moment of profound darkness, they would be able to look up at the brutality and ugliness of the cross and say, there is Jesus. There is the beloved Son. And again, we might be tempted to go, because I have at times, go, a lot of good that did. These three run away. John is there probably just because Mary drug him to the foot of the cross. But then we hear our second reading from St. Peter himself writing to the church. You will do well to be attentive to it. Well, what is it? The declaration that came from the Father in majestic glory, this is my beloved Son. This image of God's glory has stuck in Peter's mind down all of his infidelity and screwing up and not understanding it until he is an old man, that first pope, and he is passing it on now as a message to the flock. And us saying, you will do well to be attentive to this as to a lamp shining in a dark place. Peter comes to understand finally that Jesus' goal in that moment was not one singular place of God's glory breaking through, but rather Jesus desiring that whether we are in the ordinariness of daily life, in the profound ugliness of the cross as we meet it in our life, or in a moment of beautifully transcendent glory, an encounter with Him where we feel it truly and deeply, that we would look up and say, there is Jesus, and only Jesus. And so this changes our call to orthodoxy, to right worship. It isn't just in moments where we can check the box and say, I believe what the church teaches. That is vitally important. To say, I worship reverently, absolutely. But that I look up, even when Mass might mean that actually I'm having to fish around in the bag for the Cheerios and the book and to be attentive to what my child is saying, or that I'm sitting here in sickness and in pain and that's all that I can think about, or that I'm talking to you, Lord, not so much about what Father is saying, but about what I know is coming for me this week where I will have to witness to you in my job and so many other things. We're giving our heart, looking up from that moment and saying, there is only Jesus. That is what our brothers in faith who've preceded us in martyrdom on that shore in Libya understood. They looked up underneath those black hoods and simply said, I believe in Jesus. And there He was. So as we draw close to Jesus, as He hides His glory in the Eucharist so that we might feel safe approaching Him, we nonetheless are called to see with the eyes of faith, to fix our eyes on this truth of the fact that He still comes to encounter us and to open the eyes of our heart, whatever moment of life we find ourselves in, and say, there is Jesus. And with that, His glory breaks in and we are renewed and called to that high goal of being adopted brothers and sisters with Him who is the beloved Son of the Father.